And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Jolly Ranchers are hard, mostly fruit-flavored candies historically made by the Hershey Company. The Jolly Rancher is a writer and performance artist with a comedic twist and a cutting wit to his narrative growing up in rural Kansas. And that guest is the Jolly Rancher writer and comedian David Wayne Reed, whose one-man show is called Jolly Rancher and plays at La Esquina, 1000 West 25th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. 64105 is that zip code, with engagements through December 14th through the 16th. David Wayne Reed, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Jabalani. Nice to finally meet you.
All right. Well, tell us about Jolly Rancher.
Well, Jolly Rancher, a lot of people think of the hard, sweet candy, and actually it's the punchline to a joke I remember from growing up. What do you call a gay farmer? A Jolly Rancher.
Well, there you go.
So that's where it came from, and I thought I kind of identified with that because those are my roots. That's where I came from. That's who I am.
Speaking of which, what was it like growing up in rural Kansas when you discovered your sexual orientation, or when it came to you, or when it spoke to you, whenever you that point was?
Well, I think the point when I discovered it was when other people called me names. You know, that's when I realized that it was different. You know, but prior to that, you know, I would dress up in drag for visiting seed salesmen because we were kind of cut off of the grid, or always perform or do things that, I don't know, seem perhaps a little queer. But I didn't really realize that until someone else named that. They were bullies, but maybe they were also fortune tellers too.
What did the seed salesman say, do, or react as you were performing in drag as they came to buy seed?
Well, our seed dealer, my dad dealt Golden Harvest seed corn, and we had a regional sales guy, Bob Wyant, from Chanute, Kansas, and he loved it. He was really supportive. I had a really great audience in Bob. My dad was like, quit dancing so damn silly and help me, but, you know, I would perform, and in fact, I received a fiddle the next year from Bob as a gift. You know, people were oddly supportive. I had a good friend recently tell me, he was like, how did you not get beaten up all the time? And I just never thought about it.
That's a fair question. We think of what happened in Laramie, Wyoming.
Sure.
And the violence against gays locally, domestically, worldwide. How do you think you avoided that type of violent persecution?
Well, knock on wood. I mean, you know, I guess anybody can still be in that line of fire. I got lucky, you know. In high school, I had the common sense to hang out with a bunch of really tough, mean girls. And so they protected me. And I mean, you know, we're all corn-fed kids. And I remember out in the parking lot of our high school, I'd see large girls beat up other men. And so I was lucky to kind of run with that pack, and I found protection there. And so I'm very thankful to my mean girlfriends from high school.
As you like it. Speaking of which, what's it like performing Shakespeare in a grain silo?
Well, I didn't really have an audience except for myself, so I thought I was doing great. You know, the acoustics in there just made my voice boom like I was James Earl Jones, so I felt pretty good about it. I don't know. The cows would moo in the distance, so I took that as a positive sign.
Did the moos sound like boo, or were they voicing their approval?
I've only heard them say moo, so I'll take that as a positive.
Kind of neutral.
Right, right.
What was the performance piece of Shakespeare that you remember doing in the silo?
It was a really angry piece from Troilus and Cressida.
Wow.
Actually.
Interesting choice.
And I wish I still had it in my memory banks to do it, but it was a lot of yelling about, I'm going to take you down, or take you asunder. I remember the word asunder.
Asunder is a good word.
In there.
It sure is a good word. What took you to Florida? Let's bring Florida in. And how does Florida figure in your narrative and in your show? Strange bedfellows with this performance in Florida.
Well, I started out 2012. I applied for an artist residency with Escape to Create in Seaside, Florida. I'd had several artist peers here in Kansas City, like Jeff Harshbarger, Judith Levy, who had done that program. And the last couple of winters had just been so brutal in Kansas City. I'm like, I want to get the heck out of here, get to warmer ground. And so I applied to work on this collection of short stories, Jolly Rancher, and I was accepted. And I started out my year down there in January. I was there for a month. And they touted me as doing a one-man show. And I actually had gone down there thinking I was just going to have the month to write. And as it turned out, I was the first performer to go. And so I had 2 weeks to hustle together a one-man show based on my work. And I did it for a sold-out crowd of rich Floridian septuagenarians. And
a captive audience of rich Floridian septuagenarians.
And that's not really who I thought my crowd was. And I was really nervous. You know, that was the 1% crowd, and much older crowd. And they just ate it up. And I realized that I had something that really transcended not just my gay rural experience. I don't really want to, that's where it starts. But, people really connected with it, and it has a lot of different entry points. And I realized that there was something for everybody.
Well, Dave, you figure if the cows are digging it, the seed salesmen are feeling it, perhaps the septuagenarians will get in on the action too.
Absolutely.
What was the reaction to those performances of a gay man who grew up in rural Kansas and had some very witty anecdotes to tell to the rich Floridian people in their 70s, septuagenarians?
Well, I have to admit, you know, at times I felt like I was kind of the court jester a little bit. You know, it was so peculiar and out of their regular lives. But really, a lot of people come from those flyover states, and a lot of people understand what it's like to be an anomaly to the environments that they grow up in. And one man came up to me, and he was just so fascinated about me telling the story about bucking hay bales and dancing for our hay crew after a long day's work. And he wanted to talk about bucking hay bales. I don't know. You know, I just think that different people have different entry points into Jolly Rancher and enjoy it in many different ways.
You cannot come on the show and mention bucking hay bales without elaborating on what bucking hay bales
are.
And your reference.
Okay,
to bucking
hay bales. Gosh, I sound so colloquial. well, you know, they're square bales that are about 40 to 50 pounds, unless they're straw, and those are infinitely lighter. And you just kick them up with your knee, grab them by the twine, kick them up with your knee onto the wagons, and then another crew would place them a la kind of a Tetris style stacking. And that's what we did.
So while they were doing that, you were dancing, or were you helping, or did you put the hay bale into your routine and flip it up in the air and do a pirouette? Like, what was the deal?
I helped by dancing.
You helped by dancing.
By entertaining, I made the days go by more quickly.
You helped the process.
Exactly. I like to think so.
So I actually did hear you in the background at the Uptown Arts Bar during the Fringe Festival previews, actually giving your story a sort of preview. And what can we expect from the show?
Well, you can expect to laugh. I take you on a pretty fast-paced ride. You will definitely laugh. There were times when I've done it before where I'm like, God, you guys, we're going to be here all night if you don't stop laughing. We got to get through this, you know? It feels like a laugh track. But I will warn you, I also talk about death. You may cry. Several people have left in tears. I think it hits home with several people.
Because you did this performance at the Fish Tank Theater.
I've done it at the Seaside Repertory Theater in Florida back in January, and then I brought it back. I'm a resident artist at the Fish Tank, collaborator with Heidi Van, and she had me bring it back in April, and I was only set to do three shows, and they all sold out a week in advance. And then I got a really nice review from Mr. Trussell at the Star, and so I went ahead and added three more shows, and those all sold out, and so It's been going really well, and then it just happened to really fit in nicely with the exhibition that Jamie Lee Polson Lacey has done at the Charlotte Street at the La Esquina place called Have I Been Here Before, which is about memory of place. And so it's just a really nice fit, and I'm really fortunate to be able to bring it back there.
And speaking of memory of place, what do you think, David Wayne Reed, is the role of memory in art and drama?
Well, that's a big question.
Of course it is.
Well, I know for me, I journal all the time, and I've kept a journal, active journal, since I was in high school. So that's where I draw a lot of my material from. That's really all we have to draw from in our art, you know, as we get that impetus, whatever it is, and how we format, how our brain formats that and then kind of regurgitates it to the stage or to the canvas. I think it's a huge muse of most any artist.
You describe yourself as a chronic journal writer. What has journaling done for you over the years?
It's helped me mark my progress and see who I've become and how I've matured. You don't really see that in your day-to-day. It's kind of like looking at yourself, and you don't really see the wrinkles in your face come until you go back and look at pictures from 20 years ago and realize, oh, I've become an old wrinkled man or what have you.
How has the performance transformed you versus reviewing the journal? How's the performance? You called that inspiration out of your journal writings and your actual experience. How does that translate to the stage?
You know, I don't know. Have you ever seen that movie, Grey Gardens, where little Edie says it's a fine line between the past and the present?
Right.
That's exactly what it feels like on stage. You're in the present moment with the audience, and you're having this kind of communion with them. But you're also revealing this past, and it's a great way to come to terms with your own past in this present way and also hopefully facilitate a dialogue with the audience that allows them to do the same.
With some of the darker moments and some of the more painful moments, do you feel like as a performance piece, you're revisiting the past without reliving it?
Sometimes it depends on the night. Sometimes it really depends on the night. I have a story in the show that's really, really difficult. And it's a story that I wrote probably, 7 years ago. And even still, some nights I can get through it, but other times it's hard. You're doing your own words. And I know a lot of people who say, I can read other people's words, I can do that, and that's not a problem. Doing my own, that's where people choke up, and I can be guilty of that too.
Without giving it fully away, what is the surface of that particular painful moment that you have on stage, the one that's hard, tough to get through sometimes?
It's about death, and it's also about theater. I had a beloved family member pass away while I was doing a show, and I didn't have time to properly grieve before I had to get back on stage. You know, the show has to go on, and you don't have time to be sick. You don't always have time to properly grieve when you need to. And so, actually, that's been a really nice and healthy way of working through that.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is writer and comedian David Wayne Reed, whose one-man show based on anecdotes growing up on a rural farm in Kansas is called Jolly Rancher, and it plays at La Esquina on 1000 West 25th Street here in Kansas City, December 14th through the 16th. Let's check out a clip from Jolly Rancher and then come back with some reaction to it.
All right, sounds great.
It's a sunny day in May when we walk the pomp and circumstance down to the track where I sit in a fold-out chair between Jenny Pope and Carrie Brenner. The Wildcat Band plays a few songs. The choir sings. We are led in prayer. Stephanie, who is voted most talented female, sings Friends Forever. You know, the Lord's the Lord of them. Reverend Lane Bailey steps to the podium to deliver our keynote address. Lewisburg class of 1990. You are mortal. You will die. We snicker at disbelief. We are timeless. We are invincible. We are the high. We are the mighty. We are the class of 1990. The only thing we know in this life is that we will die, says Reverend Bailey. Statistically, 5 of you will be killed by drunk drivers. He pointed over to some of us. To others of us, 10 of you will overdose. 4 will become victims of domestic violence. 3 will die of homicide. 2 will die of AIDS. I don't remember what else he said, just, you are mortal, you will die. While he bespoke our tragic fates, I read through the graduation program. Below the list of our names was our class quote, like water I come, and like wind I go. It was befitting of our moment. Like water, we had all been poured here, our commonalities determined by time and place rather than common interest or ambition. As through a spigot, we had arrived here furiously as one, pumped through the halls, the classes, the system, before blowing out into the breeze. Our 10-year class reunion was held on a classmate's sod farm. Only 30 of our 80 classmates show up. Had 50 of them died like Reverend Bailey? They just weren't interested in coming to the reunion, I guess. The rest of us mingled over barbecue, beer, and cigarettes, not unlike high school. We are a polite veneer of our former selves, reunited as memories, as ghosts, as the class of 1990.
That's a snippet from the one-man show Jolly Rancher by David Wayne Reed, our guest right now on Central Standard. It's a story of growing up in rural Kansas and coming of age as a gay man and working that out in art and in drama and in theater and in anecdote. Speaking of which, it's a very fluid performance. Sounds like spoken word or performance piece mm-hmm. or a tapestry of monologues. How do you work that out on stage? Technically, what's the performance?
The performance is really pretty straightforward. It's all first person, obviously. And I'd have to say it's a podium and projection piece. You know, it's really very, very straightforward. In some ways, I have an intro to the piece where I talk about competing in high school forensics. And when I'm up there, it feels like high school forensics.
Who are some of your influences? Because when I hear that, I think of Dave Sedaris' Me Talk Pretty One Day. It just kind of draws that comparison in my mind.
Thank you.
From hearing that.
I've heard that before, and that is such a huge compliment. David Sedaris, I like him. I really like Anne Lamott's style. I love Sandra Bernhard. I love Tracy Ullman. Those were big influences. Local influences, obviously Ron McGee and late night theater. My high school forensics coach, Constance Ray, was a huge influence. And obviously my family.
Ron McGee sat right there in that seat that you're sitting in. So,
oh, well, I thought I felt something. Yeah, okay.
Did you know growing up any other people in your rural environment that were going through the same things as you were going through? In other words, that were also gay? Did you know any other single person?
I did. However, I ended up coming out before he did. My childhood friend Kyle, we were actually born on the same day in the same hospital, an hour and 29 minutes apart, and grew up together. And, you know, we were imagine the gay slur, the F word, from probably seventh grade on. And, you know, there were a couple of other boys. And so it's not that I didn't shy away from it, but, you know, if they're going to get the abuse, then I'm going to try to stay over here, stay away from that.
And how did you two deal with that in interacting with each other, knowing what these externalities were?
I don't think we really recognized it to each other until after high school.
What are some of the most surprising reactions you've gotten from the show in putting your life on stage?
I didn't realize how many people would cry. I felt really bad, you know. but toward the one thing really stuck with me. There was a guy who came up to me after one of the shows at the Fish Tank with tears in his eyes and said, "Thank you for sharing my story for me." And man, if I can do that, that's exactly why I continue to do what I do. Another friend of mine, he used one of my stories. He taught creative writing out at Johnson County Community College, and he sent me a message saying that one of his students, who never spoke up in class, never read any assignments, said, "If everything we read was like this, I might give a
bleep." Right.
Right. And
you use that actually as a pullout quote or tagline.
That's one of the best compliments I've ever received. You know, someone who's not engaged and not reading and doesn't really care, and then they read something that I've done and suddenly they care. That's a huge success to me.
If everything I read were like this, I might give a bleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's quite complimentary indeed. What would you like people to take away from the show?
I think that they will feel good. I think that they will also think about their own lives and their own place in life and where they came from and where they're going to. As I mentioned before, like Little Edie from Grey Garden said, it's that fine line between the past and the present, and I hope to invite everybody into that and to explore it. You know, it's not just all about me. It's siphoned through my personal experience, but they're all universal themes that someone can grab a hold of and fly it with.
How does the show change since you played at the Fish Tank and since you played down in Florida for those septuagenarians? How has the process or the approach changed in Jolly Rancher, the show?
Well, it's gotten tighter, faster, better. You know, as I continue to do it, it really kind of enables me to edit while I go along, and I can kind of see what's working, what doesn't work, what can be sloughed off. And, you know, that's a great way to gauge that, having an audience laugh or see what the reactions are.
Do you see this on other media platforms? And if so, how?
Oh, yeah. I think it should be made into a movie and Zac Efron should play me. And I'm sure it'll win him an Oscar.
That's your thing. That's your thing. Does this morph into a stand-up comedy routine or does it morph into an actual cohesive story?
It's storytelling. I really get shy around, you had mentioned comedian, and yeah, I've done a lot of comedy, but I don't think of myself as a stand-up comedian at all. I think of myself as a storyteller, an actor and a storyteller.
What do you have coming up after your La Esquina engagement? I know you're
I'm finishing
laser
this
focused,
book.
But
I'm finishing Jolly Rancher, and then I'll return. I had mentioned Heidi Van earlier at the Fish Tank. Her and I and our friend Bess Wallerstein have created this fictional celebrity called Brinsey Carr Dilton, and we've done a few shows, two shows, and so we'll come back in the summer with the third and final installment of the Brinsey Carr Dilton cycle, and looking to some fun, interesting rock and roll collaborations in the fall.
Wow. Fun and interesting rock and roll collaborations in the fall.
Yeah, and that's all I'll say about it.
Speaking of your Jolly Rancher, the book, how is that going to be different in terms of presentation and flow than the play?
Well, it's going to be expanded. You know, I can only get through, you know, I can't keep everybody there reading an entire book to them or nobody would ever leave. It's not going to be Nicholas Nickleby, but, you know, I still have, you know, it's a full-size book. And in this selection, I do about 12 stories. And in the actual book, there's about 25.
Is the book more fluid in terms of the narrative or does it kind of jump around to these vignettes from your life?
It's vignettes, but it's chronological.
It's chronological.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would somebody get from the book that they didn't get from the play?
Well, there are huge places that I really gloss over in Jolly Rancher that will be expanded on in the book. I don't talk a lot about late night theater and my 10-year involvement with that in the show much, and so that will definitely be expanded on in the book, as well as you know, a few other more salacious items. So
speaking of salacious items, what about late night theater? What does that add to the conversation?
Well, I know. I just really slipped that in. Well, I mean, it was a huge part of my life. That was 10 years of my life and, gosh, over probably 25 shows. And I really was able to put my name on the map being a part of that group and had some of the best times and worst times of my life. You know, I made a lot of great decisions. I made a lot of poor decisions. And it made, you know, by dressing up as a woman with late night theater, it really helped me become a man. To be honest.
Yeah. That's a very ironic thing. Our guest is writer and comedian David Wayne Reed, also humorist David Wayne Reed, whose one-man show and upcoming book is called Jolly Rancher. The play plays at La Esquina, 1000 West 25th Street in Kansas City, Missouri, December 14th through the 16th. David Wayne Reed, thank you for joining us today on Central Standard.
Thank you so much, Shelby Lonnie.
And tune in tomorrow when we examine the pluses and minuses of buying local, supporting local businesses, and the challenges of running local businesses in the big box retail era. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with the Book Doctors and a debut of a new series on Up to Date called 90 Mile View, which profiles police officer Nicole Wright. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.